Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to all these posts covering finance and property news. It's Monday and Edwin is back with me on the right day of the week. Hi Edwin, how are you doing?
Martin, I'm doing well. It looks like you fix your cables and switches. Good on you. You're still trying to tell us that you went on holidays, long weekend. Meteor ate a possum. I don't know, all these fables that I keep on hearing, all these conspiracy theories that I keep on hearing. It's really, you just finally fix your cables and your switches, and we're back on Monday.
Well, you can spread that nasty rumor. I can tell you that my cables have been fixed for weeks. Actually, the system is now working perfectly. But I was away, and then we had the long weekend, and then we had all sorts of things. But yeah, and by the way, we don't have possums in the UK. We have squirrels, but squirrels go up trees quicker than possums because the dogs like chasing them, but they can't catch any.
Yeah, you were telling me about. And there's quite a few around your neck of the woods as well.
Yeah, we have lots of them. How about your foxes? Have they visited again, or are your chickens now safe?
Yeah, they're coming around. They're nice and safe now. I've barricaded the main pen. I've barricaded those little bastards. I mean, look, you got to give it to them, right? They got to try every which way. I mean, Albo's trying every which way as well. I mean, I don't think he's going to get there, but who knows? Who knows what these digital counting machines do at the end of the day, Martin? But with all the shenanigans that go on, with all the political shenanigans, I mean, what we're going through with this thing is pittance. It's absolutely nothing in comparison to what these poor people are going through in the Middle East. War and atrocities should not be taken lightly by anyone, no matter from what side. I mean, if armies want to have it out, let them have it out, but keep the women and children out of it is my point. And I've taken a stand on that, and that's it. Regardless, I don't care. But it's, if people want to follow self-serving leaders, let them follow self-serving leaders. But at the end of the day, it's just shameful. But it's going. We'll see how that's going to reflect on our future here as well.
Absolutely, it's another very disturbing, narrative. Unfortunately, and talking about disturbing narratives, there's a really interesting one going on around property in Australia, because if you go back a month or so, the narrative was going to be significant rises in listings. That's going to put downward pressure on properties. But the plan seems to have not quite gone to plan, as it were.
No, well, that's the thing, Martin. And the question is with all these changing narratives, it's only a matter of time that we're going to see what's going to happen with this escalation of war in the Middle East. We're going to see what's going to happen, what people are going to do, because it does take a huge psychological impact on the locals. I mean, this is my personal opinion. I haven't even spoken to Dusty yet, but my personal opinion is that, quite frankly, people are going to take the properties off the market, and they're going to sit it out until there's a little bit more information and a more clear path for their own future, especially the ones that are looking at selling, which are your retirees, your empty nesters, and investors wanting to offload. I think we'll see those a bit more. But look, the likes of our mate Tom, which I keep on challenging him and Mark Boris, putting out in, if you recall, the July, August, spring we were going to have, we never had. I mean, the big hurrah that they had with Ray White. There was 13,000 phone calls, 8,000 CMAs or market appraisals that were going to happen. I mean, that if that was all going to convert to even a 40%, if they were going to even have a 40% or 30-40% conversion rate from all that, I mean, we said that was going to put a huge amount of strain on sellers, but it hasn't eventuated. And our old mate is also now changing his tune, I see in the post that he put, because he's is overwhelmed by the results while people are paying. Obviously, you know, he's an auctioneer. He follows. He has a lot of industry groups that he trains or people that he trains, and he gets a lot of information. But it's interesting how things have changed. But you and I have been consistent with that, and it's all about the numbers.
Well, yes, I think the old mantra, it's all about the numbers, is exactly right. And of course, there's been some interesting discussion and debate about listing numbers and where they're going. Some of that seems a bit misplaced now.
Well, it is. And if you recall back in August, we were talking about it. And the numbers back then, we saw the numbers back then. This is where I put out a tweet. Yeah, beware of fool's gold. And back then, the listing numbers on market for sale in the Sydney region, they were 6,583 or thereabouts. And that was as of Friday, which was the top the top day of listings for that for a particular week. So that's Friday the 25th of August, and the numbers haven't really changed much since then. And a lot of people hung on that; they were talking about it. As I said, many commentators, mainstream media, so-called propagandists were talking about this is it. We started getting calls, talks, chats about the mortgage cliff and everything, but things aren't the way that they are portrayed. And as you and I keep been saying for the last few years, since the pandemic, things change. And we can't look at things historically, and we can't look at things or hang all our ideas and beliefs on history, because as I've been saying for the last month or two, we talk about Xi Jinping or the CCP, changing their minds that are spinning on a two bob coin, but our governments do the same, and the changes to policy, changes to this, changes to that, and it's and here we are, even from a global scale, we're going to see what happens to listings for sale on market. That's going to determine whether or not which side of the fence is going to continue to be the winner. Is it going to be the vendors that are continuing to win out as property prices keep on climbing, because the demand is still very high out there and the numbers are very low, lower than 2022, looks like we're not going to breach that this spring for now, or are we going to get a flood of a horde of new numbers on market, properties on market, whether it be apartments, townhouses, or freestanding homes? But the question is why? What would motivate people to sell their homes when a lot of our a lot of the commentary is based around mortgage stress. Mortgage stress, mortgage delinquency, and so forth. But as we've been saying, as that plays for that to play out, it's 3 to 5 years through the courts.
Yeah, well, in fact, tomorrow I'm going to be running a live stream on mortgage stress, the latest results to the end of last month. And, a few people have been saying, well, hang on a moment, if mortgage stress is building so high, and it's not just me, by the way, Roy Morgan has been showing that mortgage stress is building. Even the Reserve Bank in one of their recent FOI releases admitted it was rising. But of course, it's not translating yet into delinquencies. Now, there's a few reasons for that. One, of course, is that banks are quite willing to try and help people. So they're going to extend mortgages, even allow them to draw equity out to be able to pay the mortgage for a period of time. So there's that going on. But the other one, Edwin, is that if you are in the situation where either you're renting or you've got a property, where are you going to go if you actually decide to sell and try and get out? There's just such a little set of options around. So people will do anything they can to hold on, which means that it's not so much missing mortgage payments. It's what else are you giving up to be able to make those mortgage payments or indeed rental payments? And that's the real question to my mind. What are you not now spending money on that you were spending money on? And it's interesting in my conversations with individuals in my one-on-one series, a lot of people are hunkering down. They're spending a lot less on things that they would normally have expected to do. And a few people said to me over the last week or so, You know, we're now just existing. We're not living. We're just existing. We're only paying for the things we absolutely have to pay for. We're not doing anything else. And, you know, from a lifestyle perspective, it's now significantly worse than it was 2 or 3 years ago. And a couple of people said to me, you know, it was bad through COVID, but it's even worse now.
Look, it is. And this is what, you know, what we've been saying. And that is that people are sitting on huge amounts of equity. People are on, you know, homes that have been paid off, but they can't afford to maintain them. They can't afford to have a, three meals in the day. They'll be cut down to one. And you know, we're talking about single parents. We're talking about families that you know. And there's a lot of sacrifices being made out there. And as we spoke earlier on as well, is the banks. You were saying the banks are also allowing people to draw on their equity to pay the future mortgages for the next cover them for the next 12 months. But why can they do that? Because they can see that the market is hot. They can see that in many parts of Sydney, referencing Sydney, many parts of in a number of the capital cities around Australia, they are hot and they're skyrocketing. Because again, we go back to the simple supply and demand, and you keep on bringing more people into the country, well, there's going to be greater demand. You keep on opening the doors, you keep on diluting the foreign investment review policies, there's going to be greater demand. You've got construction companies that are trading insolvent, and they're not willing to build. They don't want to act on the contracts that they signed 2-3 years ago, or even 6 months ago. They want to renegotiate with those that that they're contracting to build their homes, because materials are still very high, and the cost to build isn't getting any cheaper. A lot of people were saying that the cost to build was going to get cheaper with the new migrants coming in and the skilled labor and everything. I mean, we've been saying for a very long time, the fix was in. Nothing's being built. We get promises of million homes here, million homes there. They refer them to as homes. I refer them to as shoeboxes on a high-rise development that's cankered and falling apart. We got 47% of buildings in Sydney alone that are basically non-livable or are just about to be condemned, and they continue to fall apart. We got Opal Towers, Mascot Towers. You name the suburb, and I'll point you to a building that's almost about to be condemned, and renters aren't saying a lot, because where do they go if they complain? And this is the unfortunate thing. Well, when this is the decay of society, Martin, is where the rental population are just scared. People are just too scared to say or do anything because of the lackadaisy of the bullshit policies that have been, that the state governments have been running for the last two and a half decades that put us where we are now. Everybody talks about everything else, but nobody seems to want to talk about, apart from a few, talk about the immigration lever that was pulled, that you and I warned our people, warned our followers about in 2019, when the policies were changed then, when the pathway to residency, we warned the people more than 6 months ago with regards to the changes to even the education criteria, and how they, people that were going to get the different degrees would get an extra 2 year tenure if they got a bachelor's. They got an extra 3 year stay if they got a master's, and then if they got a doctorate, went up to an extra 5-6 years. And that was all leading to, what was it leading to? Permanent residency. And what does permanent residency lead to? It leads to home ownership. And what can you do when you come into Australia as a student? You can buy a secondary, you can buy an established dwelling, man. This is what a lot of people don't understand. You can come into Australia. Everybody talks about foreign investors not being able to own new properties. There are means and ways. There's the shifty ways, and there's the legitimate ways of owning owning being a foreign national, being a foreign citizen, you can buy established home. This is where a lot of people don't get it. I mean, I've been in this game for 28 years, and I see it. I've seen it. I saw the accounting firms back in the early 20s putting all this shit together. I see how they could navigate around the Foreign Investment Review Board at the time. It's still being practiced. It's still being handled. It's still being done. And the other thing is one of the things that a lot of people don't understand, people can buy established homes as long as they sell when they finish government policies that got changed. The new policies that got changed, that gave, and they got an extra 2-year tenure, which the mainstream are only just talking about it now. By the way, all of a sudden it's look at what's happening now. I mean, you and I talked about it in February when the Chinese chatterers, where the mainland Chinese chatterers were telling us about that, those changes, and it went under the radar up until a week ago. But it's all leading to what? Law leads to permanent residency. Then what happens? Then you don't have to sell those properties. And these people are not coming in with, with a couple of bucks in their back pocket. Yeah, they're lobbing in from all parts of the world with 20, 30, 40, 50%, even some cases, buying properties in cash.
Absolutely. And I made a show last week, actually, based on the FIRB data that was released, and it shows that there was a significant hike in those overseas investors from China buying property. But I did make the point, which is the one that you've made as well, that's the tip of the iceberg, right? So the FIRB processes are not the entirety of purchases, as we've discussed. There are many other routes. And as a result of that, it's a bit of a sort of a look over here, don't look over there story, I think, with regard to what's going on. And, the demand is very strong, as we've discussed quite a lot over the recent shows. And again, I make the point in my earlier show, as we discussed, that some of those people will be buying properties with a different lens to what an ordinary household in Australia would be thinking about. And that's an important, transformational view as to what the value of the property might actually be and what they might want to do with it.
Well, that's right. Now we've got that also, that shift in that mindset that you were talking about before we started the podcast, and that is now, we're going from the rebirth of the granny flats to kitty flats. Or something along those lines. I mean, we've got back to the teenager retreats, the permanent teenager retreats. People are going to start looking. But then if you recall, Martin, about 4 or 5 months ago, we also talked about the different ways of which people were going to, what they were going to do. I mean, there was the room letting. Even the government itself was encouraging, even the previous government was encouraging the people about, the homeowners to take on the new migrants and to take on students and to let out the spare rooms to single people or couples that were in need, and that is why one of the reasons why you took off to England, because you had so many rooms and you thought the government was going to come in and take over your mansion there in Thirroul, Martin. I know the truth. But look, there are many ways that people are going to. We talked about owner vesting or owner basically that there are people out there that will take on a room, and it was all it was all about keeping the older population in check, in sense of giving them company, and it all works well, but there's no choice, right? There's really no choice. Over the last 2.5 decades have really disenfranchised. And here we are. And here we are.
Absolutely. And, just to pick up a couple of points there, the whole idea of, rather than the granny flat, the kiddie flat, it's come up in no less than 3 conversations that I've had over the last week, where people essentially have decided to try and persuade their parents or their grandparents to allow them to put a small living unit in the grounds of where their other property is. So rather than actually going back and living in the family home directly, what they're doing is essentially looking for that small, you know, one bedroom or whatever it is, or, you know, a studio apartment, separate building, so that you've still got somewhere to live. I think this is a really important development because there have been a number of announcements in certain states to encourage the granny flat movement. Well, I think what we're finding now is that it's not just grannies that are actually going to get in the granny flats, it's going to be kiddies as well. And then the other point is that it can be done quite quickly because the planning processes are much, much quicker for this type of development. You know, it's not the same as for a full construction project. So you can do it quickly. It's quite cheap, you know, maybe $100,000 or something. So it actually looks like a very, very cheap and effective way of allowing some of those people who are getting pushed out or struggling to find anywhere to find somewhere to live. I just wonder about the consequences with all of these houses with, you know, little things out the back. And I wonder how well they're going to be built. And I wonder to what extent they will actually comply with building regulations and things like that.
Well, this is the thing, Martin. Back in 2017, you could build a granny flat for $85,000, right up to 2019, in part of, you know, anywhere between, you know, 85 to 100 and 510, if you went all out brick veneer. So, but now you'd be lucky to get change out of $200,000. In terms of space, you're talking on or just under 50 square meters of space that's allowable, that you can go, you know, basically get away with a lot of things. You can stretch things out a little bit, but you're typically two bedroom. But yet a lot of LGAs is stamped down on put the clamp on subdivision or, you know, duplex sites on and the like, such as Parramatta Council, and that's a big LGA, and that encompasses a lot of the older suburbs of Sydney, desirable suburbs of Sydney where people want to live. Basically, they say no, we're not allowing you to build duplexes anymore. And before you could get away with building duplexes on 600 square meters as long as you had the frontage. Now. I know a number of people that have got upwards of 700, right up to 2,000 square meters, and they can at best get a DA or go through CDC and build, as you say, a granny flat. So, but this is the whole point. This is the whole ridiculous thing, right? About it. And then you've got, so the cost of building and getting people to build is another thing. It's not getting any cheaper. It's going to get more expensive. But look, as I said before, and as Dusty has been asked for a number of months, is we're going to be getting from China and erecting it all over the place. That's the only option, especially for the next 5 years. I can't see things being built that quickly to satisfy the hungry beast that is out there in the rental arena, as well as in the, you know, in for basically for people to have a roof over their heads, because we've got education, we've got medical facilities, we've got health centres, and all sorts of things that people need and require, for their families, for the elderly, for the young, no matter what. But there's nothing around. It's hard. Prices seem to be climbing. Costs of construction seem to be going up. And yet we keep on bringing more people.
I know, crazy, isn't it? And I don't know whether you saw this, but I thought it was quite interesting that there's been a discussion over the weekend in Melbourne. So you've got these sort of big high-rise developments close in, and then you've got low-rise developments out in the suburbs. And so they're talking about they want to fill in the sort of the urban ring with mid-size properties, you know, a bit like some of the European cities, so maybe 6-8 stories rather than 20 stories or something. So they're talking about this being now the great salvation of the property construction conundrum and the property supply conundrum. But again, if you think about the program of work that will be required to do that, it's not going to happen quickly. So once again, we've got another kite being flighted, if I can put it like that. But actually, it's not going to solve the problem in the time frame that's required, given the high migration we've got.
No, it's not, Matt. And then we go back to the essential services that are required, right? Water, sewer, electricity, the electricity grid. A lot of these old three-story walk-ups, as we mentioned in the podcast ages ago, are basically due for an upgrade. Nobody's thinking about that. Everybody's thinking about going green and going doing this and doing that. I mean, kudos. Yeah, good luck to you. Each to their own. I mean, I'd like to go to a wood-fired pizza oven myself. That's my next plan. But each to their own, right? So you've got all these old buildings, older infrastructure that needs to now be upgraded, and it's not cheap. This is one of the things that people just don't understand. Oh yeah, but I'll just upgrade my circuit board in the apartment, and she'll be right. No, it doesn't just work like that. You've got to upgrade the whole the main circuit board, the main board for the entire complex before you can get more power into the complex in order to compensate and accommodate this new energy efficient cooktops and so forth, because we're doing away with natural gas and all this sort of stuff. I mean, there's a lot that's got to go on that the governments and state governments haven't thought about, haven't really planned through. I mean, look, personally, as I've been saying for quite a number of years, there's nothing wrong with your small medium density development, such as amalgamating two 700 750 square meter blocks of land and building six townhouses across the land envelope, and you could be comfortable. You could build you could be comfortable, or we end up with five villas. But we lost all that. Everybody went high rise. Everybody went nuts. Overselling to investors. Why? The question, we always go back to the why has many answers, and one of the biggest cohorts that's attached to one of the answers is the state government wanting the revenue, and the local government is the second wanting revenue as well for council contributions one, and the state government for stamp duty dividends. So this is the why. So it's just follow the money. I mean, look, they just got to start doing something. Something is better than nothing, because people are living in caravans. People are and that's the some that are doing better off. Others are in tents in parks. As I drive around Sydney, I see more and more tents around the western suburbs, the southwestern part of Sydney. I also see a lot more caravans parked here, there, and everywhere. God only knows how many people are living, in the vans or in the back of the car. And I'm not talking about just single individuals. I'm also talking about young families, or, as I said, single parents with dragging little ones around.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, my surveys, I'm seeing a lot of people really worried about the prospects of where are they going to live, and they're hanging on by their fingernails, as I say. But if interest rates stay high, as I think they will, and with all the cost of living continuing to just drive higher, something's got to give. And unfortunately, ultimately where you live might be the bottom line problem that ultimately they're going to have to come up with. But no, it's messy, absolutely messy. But look, the mess isn't just restricted to Australia, is it? There's a very interesting thing going on up in China at the moment too.
Well, it is interesting. It's interesting from the point of view that the people are absolutely baffled and confused, right? So it turns out that the wealthiest person in China currently is not Jack Ma, and it's not a politician. It's somebody that just sells bottled spring water. So they're absolutely flabbergasted. This individual sells bottled water and is the richest person in China. And the question, the conundrum that they've now got is everybody looked for Yafo to the self-made billionaire, the CEO of Evergrande, who's now under house arrest, of course, and the rest of the board have disappeared. Ran off or in custody themselves, who knows. But yeah, that was what people that were ambitious to be like, and that is the CEO who made it from nowhere to become the CEO of Evergrande. Then you've got obviously manufacturers and people like Jack Ma, innovative sellers of luxury goods, like you have in the wealthiest person in Europe is, and of course you got Elon Musk, innovators and people also providing goods to the rest of the world and through innovation and technology. But now it so happens, Martin, that's it. All those aspirations are gone. You just got to sell water and you become the wealthiest person in China. Maybe it's going to be the same thing here in Australia. Who knows?
Well, given what we know about what's happening with the climate and everything else, it seems to me that water is going to become a more and more valuable commodity. And, if you have a spring in the back garden, you could well be in a most significant position relative to other people. It really is, things are changing very fast, but not necessarily for the better. And it seems to me that basic food production and water could well become the center of gravity.
Look, you look at all the conspiracies flying around, right? I'm not saying that you're a conspiracy theorist, Martin, but you've got the all those theories and Bill Gates talking about water supplies and all these people talking about shit that the government puts into in the water and that. Yeah, look, it's one of those things. I mean, I remember the days. I remember the days when as teenagers we wanted to bottle the sand from Bondi Beach and sell it to the Japanese. That was one of our many ventures that we thought about. And there was a time a few years back, I can't recall the story, but a few years back, wasn't there somebody actually bottling Australian air and sending it back to China? So wasn't that about 3 or 4 years ago?
That happening? I think I remember that, absolutely. Well, I was down in the South Coast the other week and thought, gee, this air around here is really good. Maybe we should bottle that and send it around the place because it's, fresh and no vehicle fumes, nothing. It was really beautiful. But,
You might want to do that quick. You might want to make that happen quick, Martin, because if a nuclear bomb goes off very soon in that part of your world, in the Northern Hemisphere, it's going to be, we might have to do the same back at you.
good point. Well, maybe sooner rather than later. Well, let's get on and just talk about a couple of the articles, because, this was a pretty astonishing one that came out. So CBA, massive profits, and guess what? They're going to actually cut some jobs.
Yeah, nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see here, folks. Mortgage stress, mortgage delinquency, mortgage this, mortgage that. But people, but the banks are still making it, raking it in, 5% above last year's figures, apparently. But the other interesting thing that I got from that article, that news bulletin there, Martin, was the fact that they said that they called, they made 100,000 calls to customers that were in default. And this was one of the takeaways. It was 100,000. They made 100,000 calls to customers that were in default. But it wasn't just home loans that were in arrears. It was also personal loans. And this is reminiscent of 2019, where we were before you got all the stimulus packages that that a lot of industries got given in order to keep people employed. And this is going back again. I know I blow this trumpet all the time, where the industry itself, my industry, the real estate industry, was on its knees. And but for the JobKeeper is what resurrected it. But we're back there again. So that was That was rather interesting, the takeaways. But the question is that I have for you, Martin, is what are they going to do to increase their profit margin for next year? I don't know what I know what you're going to tell me.
Well, they're already doing it, so there's already increases of fees below the waterline, right? Just to sort of quietly do that. They've also started to compete a little bit less aggressively in some of the mortgage rates, and of course they're still not paying what they should be paying for particularly term deposits, because of course the cash rate's gone up, but the term deposits have not followed. So the margins that the banks are wrestling with, they're under quite severe pressure at the moment, but they'll find a way. And then the other point, as we've sort of hinted at earlier on, if they can actually find a way to keep somebody continuing to pay the mortgage, extending the term of the mortgage, for example, so they pay slightly less or interest only, or indeed allow them to pull equity out to be able to make the repayments then over the next 12 months, that means that that mortgage is not flagged in the delinquency bucket. So what we'll be seeing is we'll be seeing all sorts of tricks and wrinkles from the banks to keep the delinquency rate really, really low. And the reason for that is that if the delinquency rate goes up, they have to put more capital aside, which costs them a lot. And the other is they don't want the publicity of higher delinquency rates. So you can expect the pretend and extend story to continue for quite some time. But the question is, Edwin, at what point will they run out of runway on that? But I suspect that the profits for the next year will be quite secure based on that strategy.
Yeah, but look, you think about it, Martin. Watch the commercials start coming up on all sorts of different platforms, social media, mainstream media, and the whole thing, encouraging these new migrants that are coming in with lots of cash to bank with them, right? So you'll see the trend, and the trend will be the trend will be the if they want to target the Indian community, all of a sudden we'll see more Indian people featuring in their ad campaigns. If they want to see more Asian gravitating towards the to deposit the money in the banks and so forth. But I thought what I thought was what you were going to say was the one that was to that came to my mind was the how many branches are they going to close next year? How many branches are they going to close?
Well, they continue to close. And interestingly, there was an admission from NAB that came out as a result of the inquiry, because NAB has been closing branches quite strongly, that actually they're able to put the closure of the branches into their carbon reduction scheme bucket, right? So the argument now is they're closing branches, not because of profits, of course, or because of costs, but because of carbon reduction. Can you believe that?
Look, I can believe that, and I mean, I've seen those ATMs. I've seen so much money come out of those ATMs, but this money that usually comes out of ATMs that I've seen are usually at clubs. The ones, the ATMs that sit next to the poker machines, because they are red hot,
No, well,
unfortunately.
no, that's absolutely right. Well, and of course, there's a lot of ATMs out there where people now have to pay to get the cash out. And by the way, just so everybody understands, cash is still very much alive and well. Whatever the banks may say, there are a lot of people still using cash and needing to do cash and wanting to use cash. But it is interesting that the story of branch closures is really getting a lot of play now, and the Senate inquiry into branch closures, which I was very much responsible for getting up and running, is shining up a really interesting spotlight on the difference between what the banks are saying is going on and what is actually going on. And you only have to go and look at some of the branches that are open of a morning and see the queues outside the branch from around the corner when people are still trying to actually transact in the branches. So the banks are using the branch closure story as very much a cost-saving story. Of course, blaming everybody for using digital rather than physical, but that's not necessarily the full truth. And then, as I say, adding on top of that, and we can save some carbon as well. So it's all a bit crazy. But Leigh, talking about crazy, the other article's quite interesting, Edwin, with the old spring selling season beating reserves. Hey, what would you expect, eh?
Oh, well, that's it. You underquote, and of course you're going to get you're going to get huge results. But outside of underquoting and getting huge results, which is what I'm going to tweet out to our mates there at to Michael Beverley. And that should really be the story. One of the two takeaways was that particular house, that three bedroom house in Burwood, that was being originally guided at 1.5, but then they moved the guide to 1.75. I noticed that in that paragraph there, that the writer, the author of this article, they made a point that by the way, the guide was raised, just says the agents won't get into too much trouble, I guess. But nevertheless, the house got sold for 2.3. But you look at the comparable sales in the area of similar three bedroom homes on similar block sizes, in even older style homes and duplexes, they were selling for above 2 million, well before this one came on the market anyway. But look, that's up to the regulators to monitor. That's up to the Minns and the people, the new government and the Fair Trade in New South Wales to monitor. We just keep on raising it for just showing the lunacy of some of these articles. But the other interesting thing, that the other takeaway that I got from this article, Martin, was that the in reference to the properties that got sold in Melbourne, saying that the people that were buying was said that they were buying long term. He told the Australian Financial Review they got the capacity to buy, and they're not borrowing. Let me say this to our followers and our viewers, is that there's a lot of money out there. People have been on the sideline for a while. They've been sitting on the sideline, but the wife effect is taking effect now, and there's a bit of pressure put in. Hence the reason why even the local buyers outside of your international buyers or the new migrants coming in that are buying, there's a lot of pressure from families and from people, from couples that or individuals that are that just can't see any change, or if change is going to happen, it's nowhere nearer than potentially 3 years. The question is can you wait that long until you see any substance to the mortgage cliff or any delinquencies or anything like that, given the fact of what's going on? And I think that people are starting to weigh in now, and the demand is very high. So there are a lot of people there sitting on the sidelines, local people sitting on the sidelines, with 30-40% deposits, and hence the reason why in some cases people are paying silly dollars for properties that are on market that are very well presented. And unfortunately, a lot of these people that are in that FOMO, 2023 FOMO mode, they're buying absolute lemons, thinking, yep, lemons that have been given a makeover, a quick makeover, with your showroom renovations, as we spoke about before, and they're paying silly money. But there's a lot of money there apart from the money that's coming from abroad. And again, I reference the beginning of the show, and that is, what are people going to do with the issues on hand at the moment, the geopolitical issues that we've got at the moment with this war going on in the Middle East? And it's not only what they're going to do here, but it's also going to be the fear that I could only imagine, and the wish and the want for people to once again either come back to Australia. They've been living overseas, these are expats that are being overseas, or new migrants that have got a very strong and very clear pathway to PR, in such as your medical professions, as we spoke about in the past. That is if you're a medical profession, it's basically red carpet treatment to come into Australia, particularly if you can speak that, if you come from an English-speaking country, or your background is you can speak English as well. So this is these are the questions, and this is again the pressure that where the buyers or the competition that the buyers current buyers are feeling and are going to feel in the future, unless things start ramping up in the construction. And the government starts taking seriously and start chasing those 1.2 million 1.2 million properties that are sitting vacant out there in Never Never Land.
Yeah, well, the vacancy stuff is one that we've talked about, you know, Airbnb and dual properties and those properties that were actually purchased but never occupied. I mean, there is a whole line of argument there that's worth exploring. And I also agree with you in terms of my seat in my survey. So we've still got a proportion of people who are really cashed up and are looking for the right property and are prepared to pay up and don't need much of a mortgage or any mortgage. And so that's another reason why, you know, there's a bit of momentum in the market. And of course, it also reflects on the listings. So if you look at the current listings, this is for Sydney listings based on the 4th of October at 16,789. And then if we flip forward to the 9th, 16,909. So really not much going on there.
No, there's not much going on, and that were the numbers closer to the end of the week for Wednesday the 4th. Monday's usually when a lot of numbers come off market, and they'll be new. We might get to the 17,000 this week. We may not, depending on how things turn, as I said, or what's happening currently, how people feel emotionally, how they're affected one way or another. But it's steady as she goes, because of the confusion. I was of the opinion that we may follow the 2022 trend, and that is where numbers came off market towards the end of spring, and then they picked up again in November, of 2022. So we may see that trend again. Who knows? Because people are confused out there. There's a lot of confusion, but at the same time, there's not a lot of choice as well to take the option to sell, rent until you find something that you can that you can buy. That's the thing. Melbourne, however, is a little bit interesting. That fluctuates a little bit more than Sydney does in terms of the numbers, but they're still consistently a lot higher. Those numbers are consistently a lot higher than Sydney. The trend there, as we said, with the change of leaders in the governing party, we'll see what's going to happen. But I don't think there's going to be much of a change personally. But we'll wait and see whether there's going to be a state migration back to Melbourne, as we saw the exodus of 22. Who knows? But they still feel the pressure of the international migrants coming in anyway.
Absolutely. And the auction numbers, well, of course, last week was a strong week simply because the previous week was a holiday week. But the auctions, well, you know, they're okay. But I must tell you, Edwin, that the clearance rates that come through, when they actually come through, of course, that's only the reported sales, right? So there's a massive disconnect between the auctions listed and the ones that are actually reported as cleared. And so those clearance rates, well, they're Mickey Mouse numbers again, aren't they?
Yeah, look, they are. And if you want to look at percentages and clearance rates, you really got to look at Tarek's post and Louis Christopher's post. They're closer to the mark than what the domain numbers are. But we just follow the domain numbers. Because they've just been consistent. We don't look at the actual clearance rates itself, other than how many properties. I'm more interested in to see how many properties go on market, because even at 800 or 1200, it's not a lot of homes. That's across in this website scrapes all of New South Wales. Most of these numbers are in Sydney, obviously, but this is the thing. So what it shows me is that people are still not that confident, there's not a real willingness to sell, because where do they go?
Yeah, it's a big question.
So the rentals on the other hand, we can see the pattern there. It is getting scarier by the week, Martin. It is getting scarier by the week. I mean, I'm contemplating potentially seeing 5,000 in the summer period, and that would be right on the streets, I reckon.
Yeah, well, we're continuing to see the fall. So on the 9th, this is Monday the 9th, 8621, and 8700 on the 4th. So you can see the trend continues to be down, down, and down. And that's quite concerning, of course, because the total listings, that's in the Sydney region for rents, is continuing to be well below where it was, and the vacancy rates are very, very low, which means, of course, people don't have any options or have to pay a lot more to just get what is there. And somebody sent me a photograph of a rental for view that was running in Sydney, and they literally had a queue around the corner. They had more than 40 people queuing to try and actually get in to look at it, to be able to actually try and get, and that was just an apartment. It's crazy times.
Oh, look, it is. It absolutely crazy. And it was only 6 weeks ago we were tracking above 10,000. So it's yeah, it's scary. It really, really does scare me, Martin, again, because in some parts of Sydney, I've noticed in some areas, you know, rents are starting to climb back up again because the demand is so strong for families to be in particular educational catchment areas, you know, high school and primary school catchment areas. And it's pretty much once your property is vacant, you know, there's no, you know, it's, but you can ask whatever you want. You can ask 10% more, you can ask 15% more, you can ask 20% more. It is scary. And those that are on the month by month, as we call them, on the, you know, month by month leases, or they've gone past the fixed term leases, I can only imagine the fear and the anxiety that they go through on a weekly basis, not knowing whether or not the landlord is going to put the property up for sale or is going to increase the rent by another 5 or 10%, because they are also within, they can see themselves that they're within a particular school catchment area that it's very desirable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those school catchment conversations are really worth just underscoring a bit more, because there are definitely differences in different suburbs because of the local school footprint and the aspirations that some particular communities have to be close to those particular schools. And certainly in Western Sydney, that is ultimately very, very true. But I also see it down the eastern suburbs of Sydney and down and around Melbourne too, and indeed Brisbane, almost wherever you look. Actually, the schools and what schools there are can really determine significantly the price points for many properties.
Look, you could be on the other side of the street. You can have a house built by the same builder. You can same block of land. Apples for apples comparison. But that side of the street doesn't is not captured by the particular school, or the next street's not captured by the particular school. And the price point for that for the house in terms of purchase, you could be $150,000 apart.
Oh no, it's crazy, isn't it? Just because of the side of the street you're on, it's wacky. Let's just look at the rental numbers nationally as well, because we've actually got that data too. And so this is as at the 4th, Wednesday the 4th, it's 39,463. If we go forward to the 9th, it's 39,512. So there's a very slight uptick, but those numbers nationally are also pretty excruciating too, aren't they?
Oh look, they are. The only thing that caught my eye today when I was looking at the numbers there from there, apart from the fact that they're so low, that was almost reflective of what Sydney was in 2017. What was the land for lease? It's interesting that I would have expected a lot more land for lease all over Australia, but I can only, I was just sort of thinking about it because of what some of the WeChat chatters were saying over the week, as to they're looking at more rural land as well and what they want to do with it. And knowing the WeChat chatters, they'll whatever they can get, they'll rent. So whatever they own, they'll rent, because they're running for that, they're for the prize of 5 properties in 5 years, or the level below, 2 properties in 5 years. And if you're an outsider at 1 property every 5 years, that's just the way they think. It was just interesting that only 22 parcels of land are for lease in all of Australia. And in Sydney, there's only 4 parcels of land for lease. I would have expected that to climb, but no, it hasn't.
Interesting. Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on that too. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, we've got another tip of the week, and it's carry an umbrella. Why?
Oh, look, just carry an umbrella with you wherever you go to the open houses. And if you're looking at buying, and if you see something that's been recently renovated, it is a simple tip, right? You carry an umbrella. We have other devices, we have other instruments that I've built over the years, and the building inspectors use also a number of other more sophisticated instruments. But a good long umbrella, big umbrella is handy, because as you go into the bathrooms, because bathrooms are very costly to renovate, and yet the agents or the sellers showcase the bathrooms and the kitchens, right? Because they know that is what attracts a lot of people, a lot of buyers to pay silly money for a lot of apartments as well as homes. So if you're in a property, whether it be an apartment, a townhouse, or a house, a freestanding house, ask the agent how long ago the bathrooms were renovated, or if it's an apartment, if it was, or a property that was built over the last few years. Look, just do yourself a favor, go to the bathroom and start tapping on the, with your umbrella, not too hard, because you might break the tile. But then if you break the tile, run, because it's shoddy workmanship. So just tap on the tiles. And if you hear a drumminess on the tiles on the floor, it hasn't been tiled properly. They've only spot glued it on, and that's where you end up with a lot of water issues later on down the track. And the other thing that you look for, obviously, is the efflorescence, which is the white substance that sits in, above the grout or in between the tiles. You see it on the edge of the shower recess areas, or even on the bathroom floors. In another area to check is the balconies that have been tiled for these issues, and whether you've got loose tiles. If it's happening in the balconies, you can be rest assured that if it's happening in the balcony that you're going to buy, and you see this efflorescence coming up, the waterproofing shot and the owner's corporation are going to, going to charge, you're going to have to tip in a lot of money into the owner's corporation, into the sinking fund, to rectify all the balconies in the unit. It's not easy to do. So it's just a simple device that you can carry with you. And like I say, if you crack a tile, well, the job was never done right in the first place, right? So don't be too bothered. Just pretend and just walk away. Just add another $35,000 to $45,000 to the price of the property if that happens.
Yeah, and it doesn't need a huge tap to hear the hollow ring of tiles that are actually a little loose. And by the way, you can apply precisely the same taps on floor tiles too, particularly, as you say, in the balcony area. And it amazes me how often you find the odd loose one. And if you've got the odd loose tile, that tells you something important. It really does. And I just want to underscore what you just said. The number of quick fix bathroom and kitchen renovations that are done prior to sale has actually gone through the roof. I remember you saying the other week, somebody said to you, well, do you want the proper renovation, or do you want the really cheap superficial renovation that will just get it sold, right? And of course, there's a big difference in price between the two. Well, in the current environment, agents will very much say to you, you need to actually smarten up your bathroom and kitchen to be able to make it sellable. And of course, quite often what you find is that the quality of the work is pretty low. It's just done for the purpose of selling rather than actually for the purpose of actually living in it. And therefore, it's very important to get those checks done. And if you don't feel capable of going around with an umbrella and just giving a little bit of a tap, then get a proper structural survey done, because you can save a lot of money later by simply understanding to what extent those renovations were done properly or not.
100%, 100%. And the other thing is that a lot of people don't have is a lot of time now, and renovations are taking a lot longer to do than what they used to as well, because you can't coordinate the tradespeople as what you could, whether you're running a renovations company or whether you're going to do your own renovation. It's very difficult, and this is where you get the a lot of the sometimes shoddy workmanship if you're not on top of it all the time, and also if you're because you don't know. You really don't know, and just because it takes a little bit longer or they charge you a hell of a lot more, you think you're getting the job done properly, but unless you know what you're doing or what you're looking for, you don't know. So the obvious thing is make sure you do your due diligence properly, get the professionals to have a look at it, and also, as we've said before, don't go out and buy an apartment unless you already got in mind that you're going to renovate the bathrooms, you're going to do a lot of other things anyway. So, but even if it's an apartment, you know, get your own building report done. Don't just skimp out on a building report. The owner's corporation will pay for it, strata will pay for it. Now, if it's internal, in most cases now, the owner's corporation will not pay for leaking shower recess areas. But in a lot of the cases, why should you be paying for it, whether you know on the purchase price or after, if the representation is of something that's being done recently, and the representation is that it allegedly was done properly, but there was ways to find out. So find out, pay a few $100 for a professional. As you call them, survey or building inspection, rather than paying $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 down the track, on a full renter.
Spot on. And well, that's it. That's another rant done and dusted. I should explain that you might have heard a couple of background noises. Luna was actually chasing rabbits a second ago, going woo. So I apologize if you hear that in the background, but they're sharing the studio, so what do you expect? Sorry about the noise there, if it's noises off. Anyway, Edwin, great week. Thank you very much for that. I look forward to next Monday. We're now back on our regular Monday sequence, and of course I'm sure there'll be a lot more to talk about next time.
Definitely. See you then, Martin.
See you. Take care. Bye.